another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, where history proves that truth, or at least their version of it, is truly stranger than fiction. I've been having many conversations with Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson recently, and she has been doing, if you haven't been following it, she's been doing the Discovering Deception series that I have on the podcast, and she has a background that is deeply influenced by Branhamism, Latter Rain, and she came to this realization just recently. So she and I have been going back and forth talking about research, and she asked me to do a podcast, or either that or a research video on Daystar Television Network. And I was a little bit reluctant to do it. I was hesitant to go into something that is new and modern and very exciting to the itching ears, because what I find is in the heat of the moment, when everybody is feeling the fresh pain, usually people start attacking each other, and you can clearly tell that from the comments, people are disconnecting their brain from their emotions, and it turns into a mess that I just simply try to avoid. I try to stick with the history. And I've had a few people ask me to go into Daystar research, not just Laura Lynn, but for the same reason. I've just kind of been putting it off. However, I recently did a historical podcast talking through the history of Robert Morris and his connection to the movement. And part of the reason why I did this is because there is a historical precedent. There are historical connections that I don't think people realize, because it's like a thousand different puzzle pieces, each one for a thousand different puzzles that you have to put together before you can start to see how all of this ties into the bigger picture. And if you watch the video version of the podcast, I've got all of the faces that are kind of coming together into the scheme of the introduction. Well, that's kind of how this is. You have to investigate each face and how does it fit into the picture. And there is a connection between Branhamism and Daystar Television through, ironically, through the same means of connections that Robert Morris comes through. However, it's deeper, I think, than even I was able to do justice in one single podcast with Robert Morris. The connections run deep, and they run through the apostolic network of Christ for the Nations Institute, which we have had a few guests who were sharing their story after having escaped that group. So some of you are familiar, some of you are not. For those who are unfamiliar, Christ for the Nations Institute is a institution in the New Apostolic Reformation that is holding deliverance seminars and training and has a school, and they it was founded by Gordon Lindsay, who was William Branham's campaign manager for many years. And it honestly, if you study its history, it's actually a result of Branhamism. You can't have really Christ for the Nations without Branham. Yet at the same time, it is separate from Branham, which I'll get into that history just a bit. But it is in the same apostolic network. So if you understand how that apostolic network behaves and how the doctrines have built upon each other to develop this network, through that history, you can understand how all of this kind of fits together. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with Daystar Television, as I said, Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson hosts the podcast with me. She's a co-host on the podcast. And she resigned recently from Daystar Television. She had a program that was on the Daystar network, and she pulled it due to what the news are calling ethical deficits in the network. And what that essentially plays out to be is there were just terrible things happening, from, you know, sexual crimes to all kinds of things that apparently were happening at Daystar. And if you read through the Julie Roy's report, you can understand some of that. Some of this is recent and very painful for even members of the Lamb family. The Daystar Television Network was founded by Joni and Marcus Lamb, and their history and background also fits in a different puzzle piece. Marcus Lamb being trained in the ministry under the Church of God organization. And there's some interesting Branham history there, which I'll get into that as well in this podcast. But Daystar Television Network, it's commonly referred to as just Daystar or Daystar Television. It's an American evangelical Christian-based religious television network that is headquartered in Dallas-Fort Worth. And if you understand the history of Branhamism, the history of Christ for the Nations Institute, you'll understand how significant that area is and how that also ties into this apostolic network. There's a lot of history with Dallas. But in the year, I think it was 2010, Marcus Lamb went public admitting that he had had an extramarital affair. And it was several years before that he had done this, and people were apparently trying to extort money from him to get money out of him because of this incident. He went on Good Morning America and Dr. Phil trying to talk about how he had, overcome the sin or whatever happened. But more recently, in the year 2024, Jonathan Lamb, his son, and his wife Susie went on social media and disclosed that their daughter had been molested by a man who was involved with Daystar Network. And if you understand those allegations and understand the cover-up that was happening, you can understand that there were very dark things that were happening inside of Daystar Network. If you read the Roy's report, you can find some of that history if you want to learn more about it. I'm not going to get into that in this podcast. That's something that I usually don't touch. That's something for somebody else to describe and discuss. But I want to talk more about the history of how all of this comes together and how significant this is, because as I mentioned, it is tied to the same apostolic network that Christ for the Nations Institute is tied to. Now, I know there's going to be people who immediately, probably right now in the comments, if you're listening live and you're commenting, they're going to say, this is guilt by association. You can't do this. You can't mention Robert Morris and Gordon Lindsay and William Branham and Marcus and Joni Lamb in the same breath because they're in the same network, because that might be guilt by association. However, if you understand the history of how all of this came to be, you understand that it is far more than just guilt by association. This was a methodical, very systematic change in Christianity that developed into this thing. And it enabled, through the platforms of hero worship, it enabled leaders like this to have such horrific things happen in their ministry and yet still be able to maintain their pulpits, because it is creating what Chuck Smith called the Moses model, where these leaders are untouchable. And that leadership model is something that needs to immediately be eliminated in Christianity, because it is not a Christian theme. And you can see from the many, many leaders that are falling of recent days and recent years even, that this is enabling many, many people to do the same thing. And yet, whenever it happens, just give it a few years and they'll be back in the ministry to do it again and again and again. So this is problematic, and that's part of the reason why I decided I would talk through that history. But as I've mentioned a few times, it all comes back to Dallas, and it comes back to the Christ for Nations Institute. There was, in the year 2018, the Christ for the Nations Institute celebrated their 70 powerful years of ministering God's Word. If you're watching the video version of the podcast, you'll see that there are people in this issue like Pat Robertson, who is a big name in the prosperity gospel, who's mentioning that he was active with Gordon Lindsay whenever the ministry was called the Voice of Healing, which we'll get into that a little bit later in the history. But he's praising Christ for the Nations Institute and talking about how powerful the work that they are doing. You also have other people who are in prosperity gospel, such as Robert and Debbie Morris, congratulating Christ for the Nations. And Robert Morris says that he takes people who are trained in Christ for the Nations Institute school, and he brings them on staff at Gateway Church. And this is the year 2018. So you have multiple prosperity gospel people who are praising this, because they're all in the same apostolic network. That's where Marcus and Joni Lamb fit into this picture. They're also featured on this page, this advertisement talking about the 70 years, saying that they host many people who are trained by or working with Christ for the Nations Institute. So what is the significance of Christ for the Nations Institute as it relates to William Branham and his history, and Marcus and Joni Lamb, their history, Pat Robertson, all of these figures who are in this apostolic network? What is the significance? Well, you have to go back to the origins of the Latter Rain movement and actually go just a little bit before that, as modern Pentecostalism was starting to organize. William Branham was working with, I've mentioned this a few times, with the second in command of the 1915 Ku Klux Klan, a man by the name of Roy Davis, who was very popular in fundamentalist religion and politics, as well as white supremacy. And you have to understand that back then, all of those things were mixed together. It wasn't like we think of today, where white supremacy is viewed very bitterly by people, and all you think about are the hate crimes of white supremacy. Back then, it was an ideology, and it was seen by many as a Christian ideology. Unfortunately, it was seen by a lot of Pentecostals as a Christian ideology, and they were entertaining the idea of working with Branham. One such figure was W.E. Kidson, who was the head, one of the heads of the Pentecostal Church Incorporated, PCI. His publication was called The Herald of Truth. And when William Branham began to emerge as a leader of the post-World War II healing revival from the, approximately from 1945 is when he started building his fame. By 1947, there was a column in Herald of Truth called The Voice of Healing. And it was a column that was edited, written by W.E. Kidson, and it was simply describing the campaigns that were being conducted by William Branham. And this publication gave William Branham the name, the title of the Voice of Healing. They would say, Branham has the Voice of Healing. And you can find various newspaper articles if you search through newspaper archive or newspapers.com. You can find various articles which are mentioning Voice of Healing and William Branham even before the publication existed. Well, eventually what happened was William Branham decided to part ways for whatever reason, and he wanted his own publication. And so he founded the Voice of Healing magazine. And there was an article that was released in one of the issues, I think it might be the very first issue, saying that this was to cease and desist all other publications of The Voice of Healing, which is Branham's brand, and start publishing it in this magazine called The Voice of Healing. When it initially was launched, it was an inter-evangelical publication of the Branham Healing Campaigns. So it was made solely for the intent purpose of publishing and advertising William Branham. However, Branham was targeting many different groups because he was in working with Davis. He's working with many different fundamentalist Christian groups. So it was called an inter-evangelical, and they had an inter-evangelical policy describing that they won't go into specific doctrines that might offend one or the other. Because during this era, they're still trying to form what is going to emerge as the predominant views on things like the Godhead. So you had the Oneness Pentecostal debate, you had Pentecostals who were Trinitarian, and what Branham is saying is, I'm going to appeal to both of you. And he did. He would go to some churches and he would say that he accepted the Trinity and prayed to the persons of the Trinity. He would go to other congregations and he would say, anybody who prays to the Trinity or accepts the Trinity has accepted the mark of the beast. So it was an inner evangelical policy in that it was a confusing mess of contradictions, but it was a very popular policy because there were many people who joined into this movement. And what happened was William Branham had a nervous breakdown of some sort. he mentions it on recording, and we've interviewed a few guests and found some evidence that suggests that he went off the field and went to a mental health institute in Mexico, if I understand the history correctly. Nevertheless, he went off the field, and there wasn't a clear sign he was coming back. So Gordon Lindsay took over the publication. He started bringing in other ministers who were joining into the revival, and this began sort of a campaign of hero worship. Each minister who would come would say that they had this great supernatural experience, and they were following on the heels of Branham, who claimed that he had actually been visited by an actual angel, and many people were believing it. So they had to step up their game as they came and published in this. So you'll find all kinds of different gifts and prophecies and spirits and angels and demons and people who visited hell and came back. There's all kinds of weird things that are in this publication. But this was, again, intended to support Branham's ministry. Branham goes off the field. All of the other men come in, and Gordon Lindsay's leading it. Well, eventually what happens is Gordon Lindsay replaces William Branham as the publisher. Initially, William Branham was the publisher, then Gordon Lindsay took it over, and Branham did come back into the movement. So now it is a conglomeration of many different ministers and evangelists, Branham included, who are preaching the latter rain / voice of healings / health prosperity gospel to the nation. Branham's campaign headquarters was initially for the Latter Rain movement in Shreveport, Louisiana, but in the year, I believe it was 1952, it relocated the headquarters to Dallas, Texas, and by that point in time, Gordon Lindsay is fully in control of the operation, and there was not only the Voice of Healing magazine, there were also the Voice of Healing conventions, and the Voice of Healing movement was growing across the nation, and they were setting their sights much higher. They wanted to basically involve the entire world in this worldwide revival. And there's a series of strange events that happened in the year 1954, which I'm going to be covering some of that into a separate podcast, but essentially, the summarization of the events is this. Vice President Nixon started using the evangelists to fight communism, which he said was a battle of the minds. And he charged during one of the national prayer breakfasts, he charged William Branham and others to help fight this battle in the minds by essentially what would end up in becoming indoctrination techniques. They wanted to indoctrinate the youth so that the youth would develop into adults that were going to be against communism, because the threat, according to Nixon, was that the children were being persuaded by outside sources that communism was the way to go. So we needed ministers who were fighting that battle in the minds. Well, it's about that same year that the Voice of Healing magazine starts promoting this Billion Souls Crusade. And the reason this is significant, if you understand the New Apostolic Reformation, there's this theme of a billion soul harvest. And people who are looking at it today, they think this is something new and exciting, but this actually is something that was originating back in the 1950s. That's what Gordon Lindsay and the Worldwide Crusade were trying to push. In fact, that commission to have this billion soul harvest was so significant that eventually the magazine rebranded itself to become the Worldwide Revival. That was the name of the magazine for a period of time. And it just didn't last, because they're having a Worldwide Revival magazine, but they're having the Voice of Healing conventions, and everybody knew the movement by the Voice of Healing. They didn't really accept the renaming of this movement this magazine to the Worldwide Revival. So for a period of time, it had the name, and then it shifted back to the Voice of Healing. In the mid to late 1950s, along with the Voice of Healing conferences, they began holding deliverance conventions and training schools. So you had people like William Branham and Gordon Lindsay, David Duplessis, V.W. Grant, various others who would hold these training courses to train ministers and laymen on how to be a deliverance minister. So if you're in the New Apostolic Reformation and you're familiar with these deliverance ministers that are like shaman that go from church to church within the network, this is where this theme originated within the Voice of Healing. The Voice of Healing deliverance conventions, which had training manuals, etc., on how to deliver people from the demon of the hiccups or various other things, this developed into eventually what would become Christ for the Nations Training School. This training school was not formalized when William Branham was alive. So the precursor to Christ for the Nations School was the Voice of Healing Deliverance Convention Training Schools. There are various other puzzle pieces that you really have to understand. Most of them, if you study our Revival History series of the podcast, Charles Paisley and I have talked through much of this, but one of the themes was Christian identity. The same year that they're holding this deliverance school is the same year that William Branham openly admitted that he was preaching the Christian identity two-seed doctrine, which is the doctrine that in the Garden of Eden, Eve mated with the serpent to produce Cain, and therefore an evil bloodline was introduced into the face of the earth. So you had the good bloodline and the evil bloodline, and this was a physical bloodline. So what these ministers were doing, not everybody accepted this, but what they were doing was they were trying to shift the gospel into something else, something that meant the power of deliverance would be greater. In other words, if we can take all of the spiritual things of the Bible and then turn them into very human things that people can look at and get a human understanding, our deliverance ministries will be more effective and more powerful, more accepted, more widely accepted by the group. In the negative context, however, it turns it into a completely different gospel. Branham would also have these sermons, for example, where he would say if he could just hold one drop of the literal blood of Jesus Christ, how precious it would be, how he would hold it and love it, and he was taking fully away from the work Jesus did on Calvary and trying to instead focus on the bloodline. He also had the doctrine along with this, the doctrine of high breeding, which said that if you were black, you could not marry a white person. So the combination of all of this was literally back to the racism that he was taught by Roy E. Davis in his church, the Pentecostal Baptist Church of God sect that Davis had founded. And Branham was ordained in that Pentecostal Baptist Church of God sect, which has another strange tie, which I'll get into a little bit later. But the essence of what I'm trying to say is this. The deliverance ministers were starting to introduce new and appealing things to the crowds that wasn't really based on the gospel, and in many cases was a twisting of the gospel to make it sound different so that people would come and try to understand what it was that they were teaching. It was a divine mystery. And William Branham began teaching that he was the supreme of those who were able to teach people these mysteries. I grew up in a world where we in the Branham cult believe that William Branham was the only one who could reveal all of these mysteries, and they had to be revealed before we could receive what was called rapturing faith. In other words, we get enough faith through these mysteries that we could eventually be raptured into the heavens with God. Not everybody in the movement believed exactly that way, but many people respected Branham and his mysteries. And that's where this gets really odd, because Gordon Lindsay, as I've mentioned in a few other podcasts, was long before working with Branham, he was teaching and holding seminars with the Anglo-Saxon Federation and other Christian identity groups during the point of time in which the Christian identity groups were turning to be very racist. So you have multiple themes of racism that combine in this weird way, and none of the history books would ever state that Gordon Lindsay himself was racist, but the ideologies he accepted enough to speak in the conventions. So whether he was racist or not, it's irrelevant. It's the ideology that is the problem. He is training in this ideology. One of the themes of the Christian identity ideology is the twisting of the Book of Malachi to suggest that in the last days there would be a return of Elijah the prophet. And the way they did this was, while the scroll of Malachi was one single scroll with no chapters or verses, they would say, but because we have the Bible which has them numbered, that the third chapter was discussing John the Baptist, it was a prophecy about John the Baptist, and the fourth chapter, we're going to separate that for the end of days. And you can find students coming out of Angelus Temple who also work with Branham, I'll get into that history, I think, in another podcast as well, who were like Wesley Swift, who was a Christian identity leader. He was very much intent on focusing on this coming Elijah. Well, in the Latter Rain movement and the Voice of Healing revivals that were flowing, spreading these ideas and ideologies throughout the nations, there was this idea that William Branham was that fulfillment of the passage of Malachi 4. Not everybody accepted it, but there were many who did. And many in the leadership of the Branham movement and the Voice of Healing movement openly declared this. One of the editors on staff of the Voice of Healing magazine, who worked closely with both Gordon Lindsay and William Branham, was a man by the name of T.L. Osborne. Osborne would later go on to become a founding pillar of the Prosperity Gospel movement, along with the Word of Faith movement with Kenneth Hagin. He would also deeply influence the shepherding movement, which the shepherding movement in turn influenced the Jesus movement and basically created the framework that enabled the New Apostolic Reformation hierarchy of authoritarian control. So T.L. Osborne is a significant figure. Osborne, when William Branham died, declared that William Branham, when people had seen him, they had seen God in the flesh. And what he's referring to is essentially this Elijah theme from Malachi 4. If you read the King James Version of that passage, it says, "Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord, and he shall turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to the fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse." And to the Christians who read this, who understand the covenants and the gospel, the mentioning of the curse is describing the final curse of Israel under the law, and Jesus coming to fulfill this, John the Baptist preparing the way for Jesus. But in the Christian identity / British Israel version of this doctrine, you could have both a reference to the old ancient Jews and also modern times. So that's what they did, is they tried to transition this passage to the meaning that William Branham would be the one who fulfilled this. And when William Branham died, T.L. Osborne declared openly to the world that they had seen God in the flesh. So you combine the Malachi 4 passage with the Joel's Army theme and framework, which we've also described in various other podcasts. Also combine this with the manifested Son of God theme that was dominating many parts of the movement, not all, but many parts were accepting it. Well, T.L. Osborne did accept it. When William Branham died, he said, "This was the closing generation. Something had to happen. It couldn't go past as past generations had gone. This was it. Therefore, in God's divine mercy, somehow stepping beyond the bounds of ordinary measure, he foreordained at this hour to send us again this prophet." So this prophet, he's actually referring to the Elijah prophet, but he's talking about Branham, who's in the casket. He says, "Some are going to think I'm sacrilegious or off doctrinally, and it doesn't really matter. But God came again in human flesh and said, apparently, I must show them again. I must remind them again." So if you understand what T.L. Osborne is doing, this is the combination of, like I said, many different doctrines coming together to a body that's in the casket, saying that we just saw God come again in human flesh in the same way that Jesus came in human flesh. So we're seeing the deity of the prophet that's in the casket. That was a thing that I grew up with believing. I believe that William Branham was this Elijah figure, the full manifestation of the manifest sons of God. Well, Gordon Lindsay believed the same doctrine. And this book, which Charles has mentioned this both in his books and in our revival history of the series of the podcast, Gordon Lindsay wrote this book called The Man Who Did Not Die, Elijah. And it is describing exactly what this doctrine is saying, but it was created after William Branham had died. This book was published after William Branham had died. And what Gordon Lindsay did was he took now the theme of this Elijah minister, this Elijah prophet, but he put it on the corporate body of Christ. And if you look into the last chapter of this, which is entitled, Will Elijah Come Again?, he is describing that this will now come in a movement, not in a single figure Elijah. And this is during the years in which he is starting to form the foundations of what would develop into Christ for the Nations. In fact, this book that I have, I ordered it recently, it is actually published by Christ for the Nations Incorporated in Dallas, Texas, reprinted in 1992. So this is a Christ for the Nations book. And when you think about Marcus and Joni Lamb and them hosting ministers or evangelists who are trained at Christ for the Nations, or think of Robert Morris, who is bringing people on staff trained for Christ for the Nations, well, they're trained by people who believe that William Branham was God in the flesh. Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. So I mentioned that there were two areas that I would focus on describing the connections from Marcus and Joni Lamb into Branhamism and what developed in the post-World War II healing revivals. There's another connection that actually comes a little bit before the post-World War II healing revival. And I'm going to be very delicate with this because it makes a lot of people angry. And I've come to learn that this is something that I really need to research and publish more information on, because whenever I start to talk about the Church of God, I get all kinds of hate mail. And what I've learned just in my simple research, I've not really dug as deeply as I intend to do, but what I've learned is it splintered into these different factions, these splinter groups of Church of God. And if you talk about one group in particular, if you mention the other group that is in the splinter group, you'll get hate mail from the other group because they don't want anything to do with the first group that you talked about, and vice versa. And also, if you publish any information that might lead somebody to believe that you're talking about a religious figure who is affiliated with one branch of the Church of God, but might mistakenly think that you're talking about the other branches, they get fighting mad. In fact, in my inbox just this week, I received all kinds of mail telling me that I need to change some verbiage to separate people like A.J. Tomlinson from some of the histories that I'm going into, because it is a dark and sinister history. And A.J. Tomlinson is above reproach by these people, much like the leaders of the New Apostolic Reformation are above reproach by these people. So I'm very cautious how I do this, because I've not yet delved into that research enough to do it justice in such a way that doesn't excite and anger both sides of, or many of these factions that have developed from the Church of God. However, all of this said, there is some significant history that you must realize as it relates to Marcus Lamb, because Marcus Lamb was trained by the Church of God. I think it was the Lee College, if I remember correctly, which was one of the flagship colleges for the Church of God, the Cleveland, Tennessee branch, Church of God. And you have to qualify that, I've learned, because if you just lump it all together in the term the Church of God, each faction gets angry at each other, which is very cultish. I'll just say it like that. But as it relates to the history and it relates to William Branham and his mentor Roy Davis, there are some significant facts that you have to understand. And you have to also understand that as it relates to Pentecostalism, the Church of God is significant. So you have to touch it delicately because you'll anger all kinds of Pentecostals if you say it incorrectly. But the themes that developed from Church of God, in my opinion, it doesn't matter how it splintered, they're all influenced by that same tree. Like Jesus said, you'll know the branches by the tree. Well, you see all these branches and they all go off in these various angry ways. Well, when they start fighting with each other, you can see that they're all part of the same tree. Well, Reverend Ambrose Jessup Tomlinson was a pivotal figure in Pentecostalism because he was the first general overseer of the Church of God, Cleveland. And this is, I believe it's the oldest and largest Pentecostal sect in history. They were a holiness group before the Azusa Street revivals. And Tomlinson, through his leadership, he brought them into a Pentecostal denomination. And Tomlinson embraced the doctrine of the second blessing. So whenever you hear the New Apostolic Reformation and many of the different evangelical groups saying that you have to have the baptism of the Holy Spirit, or you have to have this new beginning, Tomlinson is the one who really brought this forward in the Pentecostal faith. And he had an authoritarian style leadership, which very similarly matches what we see in the church today. Where it gets really interesting is you can tell a lot of his theology through his son, and his son, Homer Tomlinson, as it relates to the New Apostolic Reformation today, in my opinion, is incredibly significant. Homer Tomlinson, in the 1950s, the same era that we're talking about with William Branham and Gordon Lindsay, he founded the Theocratic Party, and his platform was five different things. He wanted to maintain that the United States Constitution was a quote, instrument of God, and he wanted to replace taxes with biblical tithes. Somehow that was going to solve all problems with finances in the United States. He also wanted to abolish the taxes on whiskey, gambling, and tobacco, which is really interesting if you stop and think about that. But he wanted to also freeze the wages and profits at their current levels. Don't let the wages or profits rise above what it is in the 1950s, which we would all be in a mess had that actually happened, and guarantee farmers a 10% profit. So that was his party. But the most important part of this is just simply in the name, the Theocratic Party. He was carrying his father's, A.J. Tomlinson's, vision of the theocratic theocracy of the United States into American politics, and he carried that idea forward. So you can tell from the roots of the tree, the branches are much like the New Apostolic Reformation today. They want their hands in politics. They want the church to govern the people. And that's evident from not just Tomlinson's branch of Pentecostalism. You can go to John Alexander Dowie's branch of Pentecostalism. Both, interestingly, influenced William Branham. Dowie also had I think it might have even been called the Theocratic Party. He had a presidential party that he was wanting to do the same thing. So they're wanting their hands in the government, and this is the denomination of faith that trained Marcus Lamb. While the Church of God never officially joined into the Latter Rain Healing Revivals, it did join into its own camp meetings and healing revivals, and they would emphasize the works of the Holy Spirit much like they did in the Latter Rain Healing Revivals. To the extent the world of angels and demons, the demons causing the sicknesses, all of that was shared similarities between both groups. In fact, if you read through some of the newspapers, there's an article here in 1974, for example. It talks about a man standing up and saying, "There's a lady here who needs a healing. I just don't know who." It, much like they do in the divine healing camps when they're trying to do cold reading. Well, this happened in this camp meeting revival, and Marcus Lamb stands up and he says, "There's an opposing spirit in this community. It's up to us with the Holy Spirit to pray for the people, because Satan can cause destruction here." The same types of fear of being invaded by Satan, the same types of healing through summoning a spirit. This is the same type of revival that you had in Latter Rain, but this is coming years after Latter Rain, and the Church of God never really joined into it. But Marcus was so widespread famous in the Church of God sect, he became known as a walking Bible. According to the advertisements, he was positioning himself as an evangelist in the deliverance ministry, which is much like William Branham and Gordon Lindsay were training in the deliverance schools. So he's very familiar with this world of angels and demons and this world of deliverance type ministries that is being pushed by Christ for the Nations. So when he encounters Christ for the Nations later in his ministry, this seems to fit like a glove, because it's very compatible. So again, I mentioned that Church of God has a significant history with William Branham. So let's go back in time even before this with Church of God. And again, I'm going to try to avoid talking through the different splinter groups, because you make both sides angry, and it's not a pretty sight in the comment feeds. Later this year or next year, I'll probably get into detangling that a bit. But for the time being, let's look back at William Branham's first years in the ministry. As I said, he was ordained by Roy E. Davis, who was the second in command of the 1915 Ku Klux Klan. Davis, who was working with Caleb Ridley, who was the supreme chaplain of the Ku Klux Klan, and they were all working together with a theme that had a short-lived ideology and actually an institution or a organization named after it called the Supreme Kingdom. If you think of the Seven Mountains mandate, you're looking at very much the same thing. They wanted to conquer religion for the white supremacy purposes, to spread the ideology. They wanted to get into the entertainment, and they actually did. There were Klan-produced films that they would play in the churches, for example. All of the Seven Mountains they were trying to accomplish. But Davis himself had an issue very similar to the ones that we're describing with Marcus Lamb and with Robert Morris. Davis had a thing for younger females, and this got him into a lot of trouble, some of which was criminal trouble. And it was learned by the leaders of the ministries that he was affiliated with that he was not fit to be a minister. I'll just say it like that, because I'll keep this G-rated as much as possible. He frequently violated the Mann Act, which was taking a young underage girl across state lines for the purposes of sex. So this was a very bad man. He also had multiple wives in multiple states. So he was a bigamist, and he was just doing all kinds of horrific things. He started out with the Baptist Church, and he was a Baptist church planter in Texas. And he planted churches and grew ministries from Texas all the way up to through Georgia and South Carolina, and eventually got caught with his multiple wives. And this made the news. This caught the attention of the Texas Rangers, and they came after him, and he got into trouble. He actually went to prison. He gets out of prison. He goes back to the Baptist ministry, and he's in Georgia, and it suddenly becomes aware to the public. Suddenly the public becomes aware that he is a bigamist, and he has this long trail of just dastardly deeds, some of which even include stealing from a bank. So his laundry list of crimes and ethical violations and sexual violations gets published, and he gets kicked out of the Baptist church. So he goes to a Pentecostal church. He goes to a Church of God church. And long story short, after being kicked out of each of these organizations, he founds what is called the Pentecostal Baptist Church of God. That is the organization that William Branham was ordained into. And as a minister, they're being trained with the ideology that Roy Davis has learned from Christian fundamentalism, from white supremacy, from all of these various things. Now, you can't say that Church of God is in any way tied to this thing that Roy Davis was doing. But if you understand the splinter groups of the Church of God and understand the development of the racial issues that cause some of the divisions in the Church of God, there is where you can make the connection to Roy Davis, especially since Roy Davis was a significant figure in some of the branches of the Church of God. In fact, there is a newspaper article where he is, in 1927, he is preaching in the Church of God in Cleveland, Tennessee, the same Cleveland Church of God that is the group that trained Marcus Lamb. Now, is Marcus Lamb tied to racism? Absolutely not. But it wasn't just racism that Roy Davis was teaching. And this doctrine of the supreme kingdom that they were trying to establish, this dominionism, this theocratic party, this idea that you're going to govern the people by the divine decrees of God, that was a theme that was growing in the Church of God, and it would have been appealing to anybody who's listening for Roy Davis to come. However, if you look at the early newspaper advertisements, it doesn't just advertise Roy Davis as an evangelist who's preaching these things. It clearly states that he is a respected associate of John Roach Straton, who was a key figure in the Supreme Kingdom movement. Also, he was, it mentions in the advertisement, he was a lecturer for the Ku Klux Klan and for the Fundamentalist Association. So this one single advertisement for the Church of God Cleveland is summing up all of the different ideologies that were combined together in this merging of apostasy that was developing in the Church of God Cleveland. Now, I have some people who are contacting me, wanting me to separate all of this nonsense in the Church of God and the documentation that I have, saying that, yes, that's right, the Church of God Cleveland, that's why these groups splintered off, because they were going down the wrong pathway, so there was a splinter group. We're of the right pathway. But then you look at some of the quote-unquote right pathways, and they're still maintaining much of that original framework. So when I look at it, I don't see splinter groups. I see a tree that has many branches. And that's why I look at this all with just a bit of skepticism. But again, here's Roy Davis, who has been kicked out of the Baptist church, the Pentecostal groups, kicked out of the Church of God later. But there was a period of time in which he was preaching and holding revivals while advertising the Klan, while advertising John Roach Straton, the Supreme Kingdom, in the Church of God in Cleveland, Tennessee, the same Church of God that Marcus Lamb was a minister trained in the college in Cleveland, Tennessee. But the point I'm trying to make here is the Church of God is a tree with many branches. One of those branches does have racism in it, and I can tie William Branham's mentor and the person who ordained William Branham into the revival circuits, Roy Davis, I can put him in that branch. Yes, it is the same branch that Marcus Lamb is in, but the point I'm really trying to drive at isn't the white supremacy so much as it is the theocracy. Roy Davis had many different aspects of his own religious ideology, one of which was this idea of a theocracy, and he was pushing this through, you know, working with Caleb Ridley, others who were connected to the Supreme Kingdom, this Supreme Kingdom ideology that we should, as Christians, conquer the government. This is a huge problem that has existed long before today's New Apostolic Reformation. Homer Tomlinson went on to proclaim himself as the king of the world. So how does any of this matter? All of this history is the Church of God, and yes, it is the Church of God branch that Marcus Lamb came from, but Roy Davis was back in the 20s. Marcus Lamb is in the, you know, he's trained in approximately the 70s. So how does this even matter? Yes, the influence was there, but let's take this full circle. So if you look at the Latter Rain movement side of the equation, the Christ for the Nation side of the equation, Roy Davis mentored William Branham in the Healing Revivals. So all of the dominion ideas, the theocracy ideas, Branham didn't preach theocracy, but he had all of the elements in his training that would have supported this idea. Branham did teach that we would become the manifested sons of God. So there are themes that would be built upon the theocracy that he would take and run with. But Roy Davis himself would go on to become the imperial wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. And about the same time that Gordon Lindsay moved his operations from Shreveport, Louisiana to Dallas, Roy Davis had moved into the Dallas-Fort Worth area and had risen through the ranks to become the imperial wizard. So during the years when Gordon Lindsay is growing and developing this deliverance ministry, he's growing it in the same city where Roy Davis is making daily, you know, newspaper headlines as opposing the integration, the racial integration of public schools. So there's no way, there's no scenario in which Gordon Lindsay was not aware of Roy Davis and who he was. Davis was openly published as the Imperial Wizard of the Klan in Dallas. In 1950, as Roy Davis is rising through the ranks to become the Imperial Wizard of the Klan, Gordon Lindsay publishes a letter from Roy Davis. So Roy Davis is in contact with Gordon Lindsay. This is published in the Voice of Healing magazine, which had the Voice of Healing conventions, which would later develop into Christ for the Nations Institute. Davis, who is in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, at the same time that Gordon Lindsay is in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. These men knew each other, and Gordon Lindsay is publishing this article that was written by Roy Davis, William Branham's first pastor. So all of this comes to a circle and comes to a head in Dallas, and you have to understand that it isn't just the white supremacy. Again, it is the whole ideology that's being supported. There were elements of the ideology that Gordon Lindsay was in favor of. He apparently was in favor of the serpent seed doctrine because he is preaching in Christian identity conferences. So whether he openly accepted it or not, whether history records he accepted it or not, he's in conferences with several people who that is their soul, that is their fundamental ideology. Gordon Lindsay's with those conferences. Now he's publishing letters from a man who there's no way he does not know he's working with the Klan. So Gordon Lindsay is openly publishing this. And again, it's not just the white supremacy, it's the entire ideology. The elements that Gordon Lindsay was in favor of, he would have furthered and later taught in the schools. Now, did he teach racism in Christ for the Nations? I don't think so. But all of the other things that were developed because of the Klan ideology that Gordon Lindsay did teach in the school, many of those are problematic. And as I showed in the very beginning of this, there are many people in that same network of Christ for the Nations that are being trained and being integrated into other churches in this network, such as Robert Morris, as he openly admitted, such as Daystar, who is, you know, publishing airtime for the people who are trained in this type of ideology. So for me, I take a look at all of this, and I see this big mess that could have been avoided. I also see, you know, from looking at Marcus Lamb, I see somebody who would have been trained in a way that was receptive to the ideologies that were coming out of Christ for the Nations Institute. And again, you go back to this book that Gordon Lindsay published, The Man Who Did Not Die, Elijah. This is the idea that in the last days, this Elijah spirit will come upon the church and we will be empowered and we will be able to take dominion over the people. That is That is the precursor to the NAR's dominion doctrine that exists today, is coming from this book, which is published by Christ for the Nations. In fact, on the back, it says it is a Christ for the Nations, Inc. book. So this ideology is spreading. It's being spread through various platforms. Daystar is just one of those platforms. So hopefully this helps clear up some of the history. And it, you know, like I said, it's not that I'm focusing on the white supremacy so much as the different ideologies that came with it. And those ideologies, it's very evident that we see them today in these ministries, and it is enabling people who are predators to do what they're doing. So I think at minimum, we need to just eliminate these ideologies. So if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.